Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live on WBAI. We are a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States with 70,000 members nationwide, and New York City is its biggest chapter. 1 week ago today was Election Day here in New York. For the 2020 primaries, which have been delayed because of the COVID pandemic. And it was a big night for New York City DSA endorsed candidates. While final results are still not yet in because of a large number of absentee ballots, incumbent candidates, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and State Senator Julia Salazar, have decisive leads. Also, State Senate candidate Jabari Brisport leads Tremaine Wright in District 25 of Central Brooklyn by nearly 3,000 votes. Zoran Mandami leads Arabella Simotis in Assembly District 36 by nearly 600 votes. Marcela Montanus trails incumbent Felix Ortiz in Assembly District 51 by only 464 votes. And Ferris Souffrant Forrest trails incumbent Walter Mosley in Assembly District 57 by 588 votes. In New York's 15th congressional district, New York City endorsed Samalise Lopez is further behind right now in fourth place. On today's episode, we'll be talking to Jabari Brisport, not as long as we hope, but we'll still hopefully get him on for a little bit to talk about the election and also, you know, the hot topic of the day and really probably the hot topic of this summer, the New York City budget. The New York City Council is expected to vote on the budget at 6 p.m., so less than an hour away, amidst growing calls for the New York Police Department to be defunded. We're going to talk to Jabari a bit about the election and what's been happening with Occupy City Hall. Do we have Jabari on the line?
Yes.
Wonderful. Jabari, thank you so much.
Yeah.
For being on. We're going to have to try to cut this down a little bit, I know, because you have somewhere to be at 5:30. But thank you so much for being on. And, you know, on Election Day, I heard a lot of from volunteers that, you know, no matter really what the election results were, you know, this was a win for DSA and socialism because of the style of campaign that you all were running. Can you talk a little bit about what makes DSA campaigns different and how you're organizing not just to win elections, but build working class power?
Yeah, I mean, this was not your typical campaign. You know, the best thing about DSA campaigns is, you know, we build these as mass movements, right? We build campaign structures that really welcome many more people into the political process, and you just see turnout just jumping. And every time we participate in a race, you know, because you got all these thousands of people that have never, you know, won't even bother to vote before because they've been so let down by the political establishment that they don't even bother. But they come out for us because they like our message and they understand that it's about, you know, fighting for something greater than the sum of our parts. You know, it's a class struggle election. We identified pretty clearly that we were going after the billionaires that refused to, you know, share, pay their fair share in taxes and fund our social services. And then we were very clear we were going to stand to Andrew Cuomo because he is to blame for so much of what goes wrong in Albany. We were very clear on that. And I think that inspired a lot of people to know that we weren't just giving lip service to the movement, but actually going there and actually fighting for something and fighting for the community.
And also, you know, you ran for office a couple of years ago, and, you know, there was obviously a bump in, you know, socialism at the time because of Bernie Sanders, but, you know, DSA hadn't built out, you know, a lot of the infrastructure that we have now. And you're also kind of running by yourself. But this time, you know, the other thing that I really took out from election night was hearing you and your slate mates really just talk about the camaraderie you've built. What was it like running with, you know, a whole other slate of candidates this time around?
It was so great. Like, running for office is extremely lonely and extremely depressing at a lot of moments. I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But if you're listening, please do run. If you're a socialist, we do need more socialists. But, you know, it is, you know, it can get very depressing and very lonely. And it was nice to have people just to chat it and check in with. I mean, we had a group text, a group thread going just to, you know, for morale and keep each other going, but also to coordinate and bounce ideas off of each other was really nice. It was great. And that's very socialist. You know, it was very like communal and collaborative, which is like how we should be operating like in politics and in life too.
And so I know we haven't even started counting absentee ballots, but can you kind of just give us like an update on like what's happening with that? When can people expect results?
I mean, I wish I had a hard answer. I mean, this has never happened before where we have this just a massive, massive number of absentee ballots. They're going to start counting. Well, they originally said the first, although I'm hearing it's the 6th now of July, they'll start counting it. And they have like tens of thousands of ballots to count. So, it's a lot. It might take a bit. Hopefully by mid-July, we'll know for certain. I know in my race, we're feeling pretty secure about our lead. Although, you know, anything can happen. So we're just going to be watching the ballot counting closely and make sure there's no messing around. I know, you know, my main opponent, her name was Tremaine Wright. She like cheated every 5 minutes during the election. So we just want to make sure she doesn't try to cheat her way, into the lead during the mail-in ballot recount.
Yeah, and we'll, you know, later in the show, we're going to hear from some volunteers on the campaign and also some of your reflections and of the other candidates on election night. But before you have to go, I want to make sure we also get a chance to talk about this huge, huge issue right now. New York City will be voting on a budget, you know, within about half an hour. What has New York City DSA been calling for in the budget when it comes to defunding the NYPD?
We're calling for a halving. Like taking the budget is $6 billion, we're saying go to $3 billion, a $3 billion reduction. Cut the budget in half, cut the number of police in half. Because, I mean, we all know we're police abolitionists, so we're trying to get halfway there, at least in New York. But also, it's just, you know, police are fundamentally violent. And it's unfortunate, I don't think we're even going to get that. I'm worried, you know, a lot of people in the movement were saying $1 billion, we're barely even getting that. They're doing fuzzy math and, like, just literally moving hundreds of millions of dollars from NYPD budget for school safety officers in schools and just putting it on the Department of Education budget. So it's not even a reduction. It's just it's really just a shift in money from one department to another, which is just nonsense. It's all fuzzy math. It's really crap. It's really frustrating. And we need to abolish the police.
Yeah. And what, you know, when you originally ran, you were running for city council. What's kind of been the reaction of the New York City Council and the mayor to these demands? I know you've talked a little bit already about how they've been trying to pretend like they're meeting them, but really just moving around the map. But also, you know, the New York City Council has also had a very strong reaction to some of DSA's tactics, like doing a small rally outside their homes.
Yeah, no, they're really wilding. I mean, like, doing a peaceful demonstration at a politician home is like, that's a 50-year-old tradition, maybe more, and something that happens like every other day in New York. Like Schumer's, people are at Schumer's house like every other day. People at Johnson's house yesterday. But what's unfortunate is that, you know, specifically Lori Cumbo and Danny Drum decided these were personal attacks on them, made a whole big thing about DSA crossing some line of going to their homes when it's, again, something that's been done for 50 years and is happening every other day in New York to some politician or elected official. And, you know, they're saying, you know, things like the movement has been gentrified or colonized, which are really disgusting words for an abolitionist movement, which has its roots in the demands of Black and brown people. It just shows how out of touch they are and how out of touch they probably will be when they vote.
Yeah, what are you expecting tonight? And maybe you can also talk a little bit about how people can get involved in DSA's work to defund the police, you know, beyond tonight. You know, we obviously have this very important moment, but as always, you know, the work will continue.
Yeah. I mean, I'm expecting them to vote on, yes, I'm expecting it to pass what's happening here, which is an alleged $1 billion reduction, which is really just half of it is like hundreds of millions that's shifting, you know, school safety officers from the NYPD budget to the Department of Education budget. And another thing is like, I think it's like 300-ish million that's basically, they're not going to pay in overtime. They're going to just, you know, cut back on the overtime for cops, which we know how that's going to go because that's just not going to happen. It's very fuzzy, Matt. So I expect them to pass that crap budget with those false promises. And then moving forward, you know, we have to keep putting up the demands. I'm blanking on the website right now that DSA is working. I think it's defundnypd.com, but don't hold me to that. But, but no, people, we got to keep the pressure. And, you know, next year is another budget cycle. And it's also, you know, city council elections. So don't vote for anybody that's not going to significantly and meaningfully defund the NYPD.
Yeah, that was one question I did have, you know, how important it is I don't know if you have time to answer that or any last words while we have you online.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, it's a continuous movement. It's a continuous struggle. We'll always find ourselves, you know, asking, demanding more than like the neoliberals and the political establishment will allow us. But that's part of the struggle, too, is we keep on making the demands and keep pushing them. And step by step, we get to nudge them over into something that's a more restorative justice model. That's a you know, economy that works for all of us. And that's really a New York that makes sense and is a little bit more socialist.
Well, thank you so much for being on and hanging with mm-hmm. us while we dealt with our technical difficulties. We'll definitely have you back on again. And, you know, we've had you on before. Thanks so much, Jabari, for joining us today.
Lee. Of course. Have Talk to you one. Soon.
That was Jabari Brisport. He is running for state senate in central Brooklyn. He currently leads Tremaine Wright by over 3,000 votes. He was one of many DSA-endorsed candidates, and we'll be hearing more from those candidates, their reflections on election night later in the show. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast apps. I'm Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns. Today we're talking about the primary elections that were last week here in New York City, and also the budget that is now being voted on very soon by the New York City Council. For the past over a week now, advocates and activists and just everyday New Yorkers have been in front of City Hall. They're calling it Occupy City Hall to demand for at least a $1 billion budget cut. As you heard from Jabari, groups like New York City DSA and others are calling for more than a half of a budget cut, and, you know, as a demand to lead towards abolition. I was down at City Hall yesterday morning, and I talked to Selena Trowell, and here's her interview about why people have been down there, you know, through the rain, through the heat, occupying City Hall. Here's Selena.
Selena Trowell, and I am an organizer with Vocal New York. We are here at the Occupy City Hall, and what we are standing within is a direct physical manifestation of us doing active resistance and just take back for our lives, our joy, and to really fight for budget justice. And what that looks like is defunding the NYPD by at least $1 billion, not over a course of a number of years, but this year. Right now, enough is enough. We are tired of the repeated history of state-sanctioned violence in our communities. We're tired of our communities being starved out while the pockets of the NYPD is getting lined up and being fatter and fatter, right? And so by going ahead and disinvesting the police department and investing in specifically black and brown communities, we are allowing our educational system to thrive. We are allowing, and when I say educational system to thrive, not by putting more police in schools, by having children feel safe, not feel targeted, not feel as if they are already innately doing something wrong or they are guilty of doing something wrong. Just wanted to put that out there. We want to ensure that our homeless brothers and sisters, if they have service needs or if they have mental health needs, that they are not responded by hyperactive or hyper-aggressive police who are never trained, have no intention or compassion to deal with those that are homeless. So we want real housing, affordable housing for our brothers and sisters that are homeless and support and care for them. It also looks like being able to pour that back into the communities and whatever that looks like, youth programs that are not tied to the carceral system, so that way they have a chance to thrive and be free and not linked in any way to a system that benefits and propels perpetuate structural racism. It's so many different areas, you know, from healthcare, you know, to the end of a medical apartheid, all these things. You know, it makes me think, for example, if there were proper funding in black, brown, and poor communities, we maybe wouldn't have struggled with getting testing for COVID-19. You understand? So, like, all those things are truly tied in the fact that we are saying that policing in this state is somehow more important than the thriving of Black, brown, and poor communities. We want to make it clear that this is not a space that is co-opted by a white voice, but this is a Black-led direct action. And this Black-led direct action is speaking to current hands on the ground, people that are going through this every day, directly impacted by this. And that's whose voice you're hearing out here, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, could you maybe talk a little bit more about choosing this tactic to occupy this space, you know, right in front of City Hall where decisions are going to be made? Because, you know, there's been so many marches, and this seems kind of like an escalation from some of that.
I would say that this is. We've done plenty of marches. I've been engaged in helping out with those marches. And I think right now it's just gotten to that critical point where we're saying we're going to take it to your steps. We're going to take it to the direct representation of a system that oppresses through legislation, right? And make it known that this is not okay, that this we're not going to stand for this, and that we're not happy with this. And so I think what happens here, the whole idea of sticking around is saying that we will continue to stick around. The message itself will continue to stick around long after decisions are made, long after folks go home here. And let's be real, long after folks go home, there's still going to be homeless brothers and sisters out here that we're still fighting for, that this will also directly impact. We have 86% of homeless individuals in New York City that identify as Black and brown specifically. So this is directly impacts them. This directly impacts us, and we're one. And so we said that we are going to stay out here and make it known in an escalated manner that it's not okay, and we need to fight back to liberate ourselves, and we need to take a direct stab at institutions that continue to oppress us, whether it be legislatively, whether it be financially, economically. So that's why we're here.
And I know you mentioned, you know, bringing in joy. What's the vibe been like here? You know, right now it's a beautiful morning, but it poured last night. It's been hot.
The rapid growth of this speaks to what I think people need to pay attention to. Right now we are in a global uprising that has caught fire, rightfully so. And I think this has been brewing in the system. This has been brewing in the hearts and minds of people for a very long time. In terms of the vibe, the environment, I think it has been a mix of, you know, uncertainty of what does this look like? How do we engage in spaces like this where we engage and talk in our own public safety? Is it possible? And I think what happens is when you see the community pour in, stick up for one another, take care of one another, then it is possible, right? And so this is honestly an example of what a world could look like if we all had the proper resources, right? If we all were able to have opportunity to invest in one another and care for one another and thrive. There's no other community that has some secret key to safety and what that looks like. This is without policing. This existed for 7 days without police, NYPD coming in here, threatening people. I mean, they've attempted, but let me just say, physically coming in and trying to tear this thing down and break it apart. We have been able to show them that it works. When we are funded, it works. When we have the support, it works. When we have the love, it works. And number one, all those things, I can tell you, is historically stems from how Black people have carried themselves throughout the world. Throughout every trial and tribulation, our Black joy is a form of active resistance. Our Black joy helped get us free when we were singing in church, when we were singing by the river, when we were singing songs so they didn't know what it was, and we were standing, we were making our way to freedom and giving codes to one another. This is what we do. And to be able to kind of share this with the world, number one, is amazing. But to also have people want to actively take part in what this looks like, because they understand that to understand racism is to understand that no one truly benefits from it, but you must first liberate yourself. And I think, you know, having folks understand that being here in this moment is an act. This is a direct action in itself.
Yeah, I was at Standing Rock, and it was just like a very similar thing where, like, you could show up and, you know, you didn't have money. You didn't need money at camp. You know, you were fed. You were taken care of. There were medics. And that in itself was direct action. That world, building that world that we want to see.
Yes. And existing in it, you know, existing in it. And so,
And being led by, you know, Black people, Indigenous people.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you mentioned the politicians. Of course, we've heard a lot of rhetoric from them. Can you just talk a little bit about their reaction and what your expectations are for tomorrow, and maybe what might happen if we don't get the budget that we're asking for?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. There's concern. Folks have been slow to respond. I think folks have claimed support in these really, like, in these whispering ways that are just not okay, and understanding that the people vote you in office, and so you're responsible and accountable to the people. And you know, I think it's always this cop that, well, the advocates, advocates. When I go home, I am the people. You know, I'm from Brownsville, Brooklyn. So I still have a council member, you know, council people, assembly people, whomever, that they're still accountable to me if we voted them into office. And so this idea that, you know, oh, separation of community versus advocates, it's like bull, you know? And so in terms of what we expect, not sure. And I think it's sad to be able to say not sure. It's sad to kind of be able to expect the worst. But one thing we don't want to see is any system have to bear the brunt because folks just don't want to do the right thing. And what I mean by that is we don't want to see money shuffled around. We don't want to see, you know, the payers of the NYPD just shuffled from one bureaucracy to the other. We don't want to see any of that. We want direct cuts in their funding. We can get to the $1 billion. Be transparent about the process. Be transparent about who's going to take the brunt of that. You know what I mean? And so we don't want any funny money games. We don't. We want the cuts. And they've known that from jump.
And how can people, if they want to support this or learn more information, what's the best way for people to get involved?
Absolutely. So they can come on out. We'll be here till Tuesday. We're committed to be here till Tuesday. If they would like to follow along with the process, organizations we want to definitely follow is Communities United for Police Reform, CPR, Vocal New York, Brooklyn Movement Center, and then nationally, the Movement for Black Lives, I would say, are not all, but just some of the ones off the top of my head that would be best to follow.
That was Selena with Vocal New York. She has been outside of City Hall all of this week through the rain, through the heat, and that interview was actually done yesterday morning. This morning, police were very, very aggressive, looking like they might try to clear out the camp and did arrest somebody. But Occupy City Hall has remained there, and they are still going strong. We also heard today from Jabari Brisport, who has been down at Occupy City Hall helping to participate in the teach-ins. The New York City DSA is calling to cut the budget by half. It looks like in the next, you know, hour, by 6 o'clock, New York City will be voting on a budget that doesn't even really cut $1 billion, as, you know, many of community members and activists and Black New Yorkers have been demanding. And it looks like they will just be kind of shifting some money around. Of course, we'll keep you updated on that next week and in future shows. But we're also going to continue our conversation about New York City DSA candidates and the elections that happened last week. My comrade and fellow co-host Jack Devine and I were out on the streets last week talking to people who were taking the time to volunteer for DSA endorsed candidates. Let's hear why they got involved and why they were spending last week volunteering for these candidates.
Very exhausted. I've been spending a lot of time over here at the Farah Jabari office. But it's really exciting. I am so proud of all of the work I've seen members do. I am so in awe of the ways that people have dedicated big pieces of their lives to this fight. It's really exciting and inspiring. And it also makes me really excited too, because we've continually seen these big membership bumps through the campaigns that DSA has run, right? Like through the Bernie campaign, DSA, a huge swell, right, in 2016. But then also now in 2020, and after Bernie dropped out of the race, DSA had a lot more people come into it. And I'm really excited to see after election night what new people decide to join our movement.
I'd volunteered for DSA electoral stuff before in past elections, but I have been mostly unemployed the past year. My most recent job ended with the coronavirus pandemic when I was first indefinitely suspended and then retroactively let go. And I was sort of pissed about that, but Tasha emailed Michael Pollack's data entry crew, which was an email list I was on, that she wanted people who were good at data entry, and I replied because I wanted ways to feel like I could channel having a lack of structure. And I don't know, this is, volunteering for FAIR is definitely the like most rewarding campaign I've ever been part of because it's such like, it's so coherent.
I know that Jabari and FAIR are two people who've been like super active in New York, both as fighting to get elected, but also as organizers and people you know see out on the streets for the last few years and before that. And you know, I figured I'd get out here and support them as much as I can. You know, big proponent of getting working class people into politics, especially union members, and they're both fighting for the New York Health Act, which, you know, I think is the most important piece of policy we can fight for at this moment.
I feel like there's been a lot of support for both of them. Many people, if I go to hand them their pamphlets, say I'm already voting for them, or I've actually been out of the poll site with FAIR a little bit, and she's been talking to people, and I think really getting them excited about voting for her. It's been great. And I want to be out here because I think it's just so important that we have more public school teachers, more nurses, more working class people in office.
So I'm volunteering because I want Farah and Jabari to win. You know, I think it's important to have leftists at state level. You know, when we look at what happened just in the last few months, like, you know, maybe we would have had the rent cancellation we need. Maybe we would have had more decisive action to protect people from COVID and, like, you know, keep people both safe and secure during this time if we had more leftists in Albany. I work for a union. I'm a member of the labor movement. It means a lot to me to have union members representing us in Albany.
Hey, it's Brendan from Central Brooklyn, DSA. Nothing but good vibes. Most people very positive. Getting a lot of people saying that they already voted for Farah. So I'm really happy. Hoping Jabari wins, hoping Marcel wins, hoping, you know, everybody else wins.
So what brought you out in the street today to get out the vote for Farah and Jabari?
I believe in supporting local elections and trying to approach it, not just focusing at the major presidential races, but our local community members that are running for office. And these two candidates in specific, tenants' rights is a big issue for me, and both of them I felt like had very good stances on tenants' rights.
And those were volunteers through New York City DSA who were volunteering for New York City DSA-endorsed candidates last week. And to close out the show, we're actually going to hear from the candidates themselves, what their reflections were on election night after going through a very grueling and very different election cycle where they couldn't knock on doors. But still looks like DSA is going to have some very big wins and shake up the establishment. Here's New York City DSA candidates talking to volunteers on election night last week.
I want to thank and give a shout out to my other members of my slate, Farah Safran Forrest, Marcela Matania, Zora Mamdani. We made it, y'all. Samuels Lopez, we got here.
Got my brother, my heartbeat, Jabari Brisport. I mean, thank you for the amazing campaigns that they ran as well, because we all fueled off of each other. We all built off of each other.
The amazing bonds that I created with my slate mates. Semeles, I'm so proud of your story and what you've accomplished and what you're doing. But particularly to Zoran, to Farah, Jabari, we created a bond that's going to go beyond what we do today.
I'm so excited to see the final results for all of our comrades who are running for the first time. You know, so far, what I can say is that regardless of the final results, we've done it again, and we've done it so much bigger this time around. this victory really belongs to every single one of you. It belongs to every single person who has demanded more from our elected leaders. It really belongs to everyone who has been struggling constantly against rising rents and failing healthcare and underfunded schools and overfunded police departments, and every single person who knows that our communities deserve better than the exploitation and the violence of capitalism.
We were last in fundraising in January when the first filings came out, and then COVID-19 shut down our canvassing operations. And I thought, I didn't know if we could pull through. And I am just so incredibly, incredibly grateful for, the resiliency of our movement. And I just have some numbers I want to run by you, because we hung in there, and I'm happy to say that we've had over 1,000 volunteers contribute to this campaign. You know, before COVID, we had knocked on over 25,000 doors, and we switched to phone calls and made over 350,000 phone calls to people in this district. We sent mail to 118,000 households. We sent mail to every single household in this district. And we actually set a New York State record for donors. We had over 7,000 people donate to this campaign, 7,000 different individuals. That is more than any state legislature campaign in New York history. Thank you for being part of that.
Can you believe over 1,000 volunteers and many thousand small donors? I mean, when we first started this campaign, they told me what the goal was. I was like, well, don't talk to me about it. Talk to Jesus, because Jesus is the miracle worker. But who needed a miracle when you got people backing you up? And we definitely showed out. We showed that a working class candidate running unapologetically against a real estate industry, against police brutality, against capitalism, can build a powerful people-backed campaign.
They are always trying to red bait us. They're always trying to taunt us for being socialists, as though it's some kind of secret. And what it reminds me every single time is that they're clearly just not talking to working people the way that we are. We're seeing these victories because we are having meaningful conversations with our neighbors, because we are talking to people about the issues that really matter to them. And it's the reason that when we talk, you know, without any shame about being socialists, people don't blink. And for those who aren't talking to our neighbors and who are relying on the old conventions and on the status quo to do things and to try to stay in power, they're not going to understand, right? They don't understand the appeal of democratic socialism because they don't want to. But that's what's different between, that's the difference between them and what we have been building. And this is really a significant night.
And it's been an amazing ride, y'all. And so the ride, of course, as we've been saying, is not over. We still have these absentee ballots to count up. We're feeling good about them. And so right now, we just want to say thank you. Thank you for your support. Please keep the positive comments going on Twitter. Keep Instagramming. Keep hitting us up on Facebook, because this is what has been fueling us, and it's going to continue fueling us until the very end.
I also want to talk about the Democratic establishment, because we scared them, y'all. But I also want to thank the DSA for the incredible, incredible work done on this campaign and the incredible, incredible work we do every day on so, so many other issues. It's really remarkable. I'm so proud of the coalition we built during this campaign. It is truly a coalition that reflects the diversity of this district and this country. And I'm proud of who I am, because I am a proud Black gay man running for office, and we don't get this far. Black lives matter to me. They have always mattered to me. And no amount of political noise is going to change that. I'm happy to say I am my ancestors' wildest dreams.
As an immigrant Indigenous woman, to be able to go in and vote and see my name on a ballot the pushback that the establishment has done, the threat that they felt that I had, the audacity to think that I had a right to this amount of power, shows me, and I hope it shows you guys, what we are capable of. There is so much more for us to do, and I am so incredibly humbled to be working with each and every one of you.
That final voice you heard was Marcela Montanez. Also in that clip, State Senator Julia Salazar and candidates for State Assembly and State Senate, Farah Souffrant-Forest and Jabari Brisport. If you go to revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, you can listen to other episodes of the show that we have done with these DSA-endorsed candidates. And of course, we will be covering the election results when we do finally get them in and absentee ballots are covered. And we will also continue to be covering on this show what's happening with the City Hall budget, as well as defunding the police. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute. I'm Lee Zishi. Thank you all so much for joining us today, and take care out there in New York City.